sparing an ultimatum for unfaithfulness. And he, answering, said to him, Lord, let it alone this year yet, until I have dug around it and fertilized it. Luke 13, verse 8. The expression of Peter about the day of the Lord that will come as a thief in the night is preferred by many as a text for a New Year's Eve meditation. And people of the same theological persuasion prefer the text that we read above this meditation for the first morning of the new year. This text has been taken from the parable of the barren fig tree, which was allowed to live for 1 year yet, in order to see if in the end it would still be fruitful. The subject then is the 1 year still granted to the tree, to associate our thoughts to the familiar good intentions of New Year's Day. But just as necessary as it is to place the expression of Peter about the thief in the night in the full prospect of every day of our busy life, so it is necessary every day to place this other expression about the fig tree, which still was allowed another year to grow, before our mind's eye. Also, this word of revelation is not satisfied with a secondary place as an occasional motto for New Year's Day. It wants to be seriously considered as a word for every day. And to recognize it as such is the more necessary, since this story of the fig tree indeed seems to be a paradox in the parable of Christ. A well-known commentator, San, mentioned that the remarkable part of this parable is that the fig tree was found in a vineyard. It is, he said, not uncommon that in an ordinary garden, several different kinds of trees are found together in a small area. But in this case, the presentation of the story points actually into a different direction. Very few fig trees were present in this garden, which for the rest was only planted by vines. In verse 6 of our chapter, the garden is called a vineyard, and in verse 7, the gardener is called the keeper of the vineyard. Thus this fig tree was, so to speak, an exception in the garden intended only for the production of grapes. It was, to borrow an image from the animal world, an odd duck in the vineyard. This causes the exponent to think that this fig tree does not refer to a random person or a random people, and not even to a random group of people, but to a specific and particularly identified social community, namely the city of Jerusalem. For indeed, the vineyard is in the Bible continually an image, also often in the parables and figurative language of Christ, of all the people of Israel as God's possession. And in the society of Israel, the city of Jerusalem had a very particular place. A large city within the entourage of the surrounding country is actually always something special. The large city leads an other life and maintains a different lifestyle than the surrounding rural areas. In the life of a large city, the strength and weakness of people culminate. Its power of growth and strength to work reveal themselves there in a very particular and intensive way, but also its sin and decadence. Furthermore, the large city has an undisturbed perception of its own greatness. It needs a huge supply of goods, for as simple as life in the country is, so devouring is the large city, with its hyperculture, as some express it somewhat flatteringly. It is better to speak of a cultural imbalance, self-consumption, and short-sightedness. Moreover, as slow as a vine will grow, and as simple as it will show itself when it produces its fruit, which will only be considered worthwhile when produced in great quantities, so impressive, so busy, and so abundant of heavy fruit is the fig tree, in this case the large city, in particular the capital city. If the fig tree of this parable is the capital city of Jerusalem, the image is clear. That proud city flaunted itself in a very noticeable way within the vineyard of Israel's society. This city promised to produce lots of fruit, a massive amount, broad and striking, the thick tree spread out its branches and roots in the vineyard. It pretended to have deserved this place in the vineyard because of its eminence. But exactly against that fig tree, against its striking characters, against the mighty lords of exception, against the large city of Jerusalem, against this capital city, John the Baptist had spoken his threats. When he saw the Pharisees and Sadducees among his listeners, the leaders, the town elite, the flower of Judea, he began to speak of the tree, the high tree, which soon was to be cut down. The axe was already laid at the root of that tree. Then after that came the Christ, and John the Baptist expected the tree to fall then. But instead, the tree was spared, and all the land of Israel was fertilized again, as if the world was to continue in its old track. The sick, also of that large city, were healed, and the mighty lords, the governing body, continued their seigneurial way of life in peace, and kept their honorable positions in the life of society. Was that not a torturing riddle? Had John indeed prophesied correctly about that fig tree? Was the Messiah in less haste than his herald John? Had the tempo at that critical hour been reduced? Had the Lord forgotten his anger? Ah, the trees, the tree of John and the miracle tree of Jonah. No, no, answered the Christ. Oh no, what John the Baptist said was correct. Only judgment in its definite form was postponed and temporarily restrained. Indeed, that tree was every year a disappointment. And in the end, if it remained that way, it would finally fall. But upon the suggestion of the keeper of the vineyard, the owner of the garden allowed the fig tree, in particular Jerusalem, the opportunity of repentance for the last time, which actually was granted and intended for it, exactly as to that one tree which had obtained an exceptional position in the garden by the garden's owner. Yet one more year, particular care would be spent on this fig tree. But if the fruit then still stayed away, it would fall relentlessly. When Christ had said this, he went on to Jerusalem. He did many acts of mercy in this city, healed an extraordinary number of sick people, and even at the end of his life of humiliation here on earth, performed a massive healing in that city, and allowed the voice of his prophetic preaching to be heard exactly there as loud as possible. Was that the sparing of that tree? Certainly. And actually, it was much more than that. It was a fertilizing of it. But whoever watched carefully and had remembered the parable of the fig tree in his heart understood very well that the merciful acts of healing of that last week contained the pressure of an ultimatum. Every new supply of manure, every new blessing is an ultimatum. And while Christ as surgeon appeared in the city, his heart in the administration of his office, beating in obedience, contemplated already the city's judgment and destruction. Also here, the message of the offense and folly in the preaching of Jesus is appealing to us and contradicting our flesh. The blind saw, the lame began to walk, and children were blessed. Bethesda saw him in his compassionate love, but all of it was an ultimatum. And thus every blessing in the life of one who estranges himself from God is still today an ultimatum. Perhaps, as far as the intensity goes, it may well be the most extreme command, while as to time, it probably is the last. The surgeon, who for a whole year treated the unfaithful tree with an abundance, already laid the axe at the root of the tree. And when he is coming, it will be soon, he will appear as the thief at night. Every blessing in time is an ultimatum for the flesh, to teach us to pray for the blessing of eternity.